And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Here on Declare Your Independence, I'm Ernest Hancock. Oh, today in studio is Dr. Frank Tamburi, and he's in his chair. Yay! You know, I want to make sure that we get all the latest news and what's going on. The Trump report. And, of course, it's going to be the Frank Tamburi report here, you know, coming up. You know, he's running for U.S. Senate on a libertarian ticket against John McCain. Oh, but Kelly Ward, yeah, it's John McCain. You know, it's going to be the millions and gazillions of dollars it's going to do in John McCain. So we're going to go ahead and have. Oh, you got a clip you want to go right off with? Yeah, we're going to get some, and you know we'll get to that. But you know, welcome Frank. It's good to see you.
Good morning. So today is a special day. You guys know what today is. It should be a national holiday, probably in a few years. It'll be a national holiday, bumping George Washington's birthday and the rest.
Okay, I can't wait.
Anyone?
What? All right. What?
Tarzan Keith?
This is when he announced his running for president last year.
That's right. It's Trump Day.
Oh, my God.
It's Trump Day. It's 1 year today.
I can't believe Keith knew
I know.
That.
Today is Escalator Day. Golden Escalator Day. And in celebration... Here we go, the one-year anniversary. Here we go.
How the hell did Keith remember that?
11 a.m., June 16th, 2015. Here in newsrooms like this one, people were watching, waiting to see if Donald Trump was really going to run for president. And when you go back and watch the tapes now, watch CNN's newscast from that very hour, you can see how it foreshadowed the entire crazy election year.
And we could be moments away from seeing a 12th Republican candidate enter the race for the White House. Donald Trump, everyone, is expected to announce his plans from the New York building that bears his name.
Because often it is all about his name. So the question is he serious this time or just selling something?
So you can hear right there in the anchor's voices a lot of skepticism about Trump. But then he came down that famous escalator.
He's going down an escalator right now in the Trump Tower, not far from the Gucci store, which he has
preceded by his beautiful wife saying hello.
Trump's speech was mesmerizing. You couldn't turn away. It was entertaining. It was shocking. And to many, it was downright offensive.
We don't have victories anymore. I beat China all the time. I will be the greatest jobs president that God ever created. I'm really rich. I'll show you that in a second.
One line in particular became infamous. It was his comments about Mexicans coming to the U.S.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people.
This went on for the better part of an hour. And afterwards, the commentators were shocked. Look how S.E. Cupp commented on Trump. This foreshadows a year of drama between Trump and the GOP.
There are no words to describe what just happened. Yes, I got an embargoed speech. It was nothing like what we just saw. The embargoed speech was serious. It was maybe 10 minutes long. Trump was winging it from the very beginning that he walked on that stage.
There were also immediate complaints about Trump getting too much airtime, too much free TV exposure. And John Berman addressed that right away.
I mean, on Twitter, people just railing against it, saying things like, how can you keep this guy on TV? This is a farce. But he's in the race.
At the end of the hour, Berman had a sense this was going to be in the history books, that we were going to be talking about this day for a long time to come.
Because I'm not even sure I'm kidding when I say we all might look back and say we remember where we were when it happened, for better or for worse.
And I think he's right. I don't know about you, but I remember exactly where I was, standing in a restaurant, watching Trump's speech. I was late for an appointment because I could not turn away. For better or worse, Trump is must-see TV, and that's going to continue all the way through November.
All the way through November.
So the question is, do you guys remember where you were when Trump went down that escalator? Tarzan.
Okay, wait, hit the bike.
I was not present.
Well, how do you even know that name? I mean, that date.
Because it's on the news now.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Keith never ceases to amaze. So, do you remember where you were, Ernie?
Yeah, listening to you telling me what was going to happen. You know, this is what. Yeah, we did watch that. I paid attention. You know, I'm like, yeah, whatever.
I remember. I was at home. I was on the couch. I didn't get to see it live. I saw it later that night. It was on a replay. Actually, I think I pulled it up online. And I watched it with Savard. She was on the couch at my old apartment. And literally, we were searching for our home, the one that we have now. And we were going between these couple homes and trying to make a bid on the home that we have now. And she was, you know, constantly kept passing. I remember she kept passing me her computer to show me on Zillow different homes. And I was like getting a little, not annoyed, but it was just, she kept showing me the computer. And I'm like,
that.
And I'm sitting there, I'm mesmerized. I'm sitting there watching this. I said, Savard, are you watching this? This is crazy. And then, of course, then eventually she began tuning in and she closed the computer and the two of us were riveted that entire hour. I still remember him coming down that escalator.
And here comes Frank. He goes, Ernie, sends me an email. And he goes, now don't hate me. Okay. But I want to do every Thursday, we can do some Trump report. And I'm going, hell yeah. You know, because that's going to be my presidential election coverage. The only time I look, I don't care. But, you know, it's been entertainment. Now, there's the bet. Okay, mm-hmm. Here was the bet, as I remember it. Frank says that bet a dollar that Trump will get the nomination. Then, if he's nominated, then he will be president of the United States. Now, the bet with me, what I'm going, nah, Jeb. Jeb's not dead, okay? Jeb.
Here's a heartbeat.
Jeb's not dead. You haven't heard anything of Jeb. The Bush Walker machine will not just sit this one out. I guarantee it. So we're going to see what's going to happen.
So what do you think? Do you think they're just going to change the rules a week before the convention?
You think they're not?
Well, they're going to change a few things.
Well, you know, the one thing is that we had talked to Roger Stone and that they were going to have an event outside.
Called Stop the Steal.
You know, outside the convention, just to, you know, and they like, and they talked to you about speaking. So I'm going, you're kind of, ooh, are you still going? Are you and Keith going to go?
I'm waiting to hear from Roger. I sent a long, well, not long, it was just a couple paragraph letter to him, reminding him about, of course, the show and about some other things about speaking there, because he's not having Stop the Steal, because technically, you know, he's the presumptive nominee. Now, granted, you know, they could still play a game.
I think they already are.
Out.
Didn't they say, nope, pro-Trump rally not allowed outside the RNC. We're not allowing it, not allowed.
Well, that's what maybe it's Roger's sitting on right now, because it was going to be pro-Trump rally or Stop the Steal if they're still playing games. If they're not, meaning that now that assumingly he's the nominee, he still wants to have the people show up just in case. And if, you know, if the Republicans play good, then it's a pro-Trump rally to support the nominee inside. After all, there's going to be absolute bedlam outside. I mean, it is going to be ground zero, and I certainly hope Mr. Magoo, that's John Kasich for you, any of the new timers here, that he's going to be there with his military police, from what I understand, with whole full riot guard to deal with what's about to descend on
Cleveland.
Oh, yeah.
Kasich is governor of Ohio.
So we'll see what his governing chops are. I know what he's going to do. He's going to get the rioter Bernie Sanders people and the Occupy Wall Street people, and then he's going to get the rioting or defensive Trump people, and he's going to pull them all into a room, walk out, and lock the door.
Oh, yeah, I was just saying.
That's typical John Kasich.
Just make him work it out.
Yeah, just lock him in a room, walk out.
Let him work it out. Yeah, there might be some bloody Trump supporters running for their lives, but, you know, and that's one thing. They're advertising you know, violence. You know, the left is like, you know, we're going to be violent because that's why we know violence. Why? Because we want what we want. What do you want? I don't know. What we said, we got a memo somewhere. Somebody told me to. I got paid to be here and complain.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
It's wrong for the media to acknowledge the facts. The facts are the superdelegates are largely on Clinton's side, and they're probably not going to move based on the interviews we've done with them. Why is it wrong for the media to acknowledge that on Tuesday night?
Because they aren't facts at all. So first, let's just acknowledge what are actual facts, that the superdelegates do not vote until the convention. In fact, if they're not at the convention, their votes won't get counted at all, which
but
is
the superdelegates
never
are the establishment.
Television.
They're all establishment people, and they're all voting for Clinton, only 46 for Sanders.
Now, you, Brian, you guys, and I mean CNN and all of the establishment press, totally tilted the playing field here from day one by counting those superdelegates, when in fact you know the superdelegates do switch their votes all the time. They switched it in 2008. Hillary Clinton had a 100 superdelegate lead, which completely vanished in 2008. So
was the
why
media
did you
wrong
count
in
it from day one, which was absolutely incorrect? It was, in fact, journalistic malpractice. Why did you guys do that? You
so you're saying more information is not a good thing. We should hide people from the reality of what the superdelegates are thinking?
No. Brian, this is very important. If you say, hey, superdelegates are likely to vote this way, or they say they're voting this way, as an aside, that's perfectly fair. But if you count them in the official tally, when you know they can and often do switch their votes and have not voted yet, that is simply incorrect. That is not a fact. That is the opposite of a fact.
But the Hillary delegates switched because Obama was going to win. In this case, we know the superdelegates are establishment figures, they're former governors and people like that, that are clearly pro-Clinton. Nothing's going to happen that's going to change their mind.
Again, not true. So, Brian, you say nothing's going to happen.
What's going to happen? Tell me.
I can tell you exactly what could happen.
Are you wishing for an indictment?
Are for extraordinary. Hold on. They are for extraordinary circumstances. You know what would be extraordinary? If one of the candidates were indicted. Of course. So you guys keep assuming there'll be no indictment. And Brian, I hear you have reliable sources. Well, so tell me, do you have any sources inside the FBI or the State Department that have already told you that she is not going to get indicted? Because that would be news.
I do not. I cover media, not the FBI. But the indications at the moment are that she hasn't been interviewed by the FBI. I hear what you're saying about the indictment. But other than that, it seems to me you're misleading your audience, giving them more hope than they should actually have. You think about what's going to happen on Tuesday at 8 p.m. New Jersey's going to close.
No, that's not true at all.
And for the first time in the history of this country, frankly, this is really exciting to say, but the first time in the history of this country, we're going to have a female nominee of a major party. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat or Libertarian. That's something this country should note and acknowledge. And don't you think it's a shame that the Bernie Sanders talk is going to overshadow what we can all agree is a historic milestone?
I mean, look at the framing you just gave it, right? So I think Hillary Clinton is a completely pro-establishment candidate that will continue this corrupt system where private interests finance
their
elections.
But what about the historic milestone?
And so, but instead of looking at it as, hey, wait a minute, one guy hasn't taken that corrupting money and the other one has, you frame it as male versus female and hence put me in a position where I'm forced to say, no, I don't think it would be historic because I think it's the same old establishment, whether it's a male, a female, or anything else. So the framing is all biased. And I'm not saying that because I think that you're liberal or you're conservative, you're pro-Hillary or not. It's just the establishment told us from day one, the superdelegates have already voted when they did not, and you tell us today to, hey, make sure you go away and you support the establishment candidate. And you're wrong about how I've presented it on the show. I tell people about the delegate math all the time. And as Bernie Sanders himself acknowledges, it is an uphill battle for him to win more pledged delegates, a massive uphill battle, right? And I've said, and I've challenged Bernie Sanders on my program, and I said, look, if there are more pledged delegates on her side and there's no indictment, well, then that the race is over, right? Those are ifs, though. They have not happened yet. And the superdelegates vote at the convention. So for you guys to call it when you don't know what the circumstances are and those people have not voted yet, it is just simply incorrect. That is not journalism.
Incorrect.
Cenk, thank you for being here. It is great talking with you. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
So they are definitely pushing this, Clinton woman. Who is this guy, Brian what on CNN? Who is this guy?
This is, let me see.
I mean, do we care?
The reporter. Not even sure the reporter is. That's the first time I've seen him. He's on CNN. That was from CNN, and it was reported on the money section for CNN. And the person being interviewed, of course, is Cenk Uygur. I can never get his last name right. I apologize. It's the letter U-Y-G-U-R. Cenk Uygur. Anyway, he's from the Young Turks. If you see the Young Turks broadcast, he's really a bright guy. I think he's just misled often. I mean, he flipped out on Peter Schiff one time and thought Peter Schiff was a nut job. With the Ron Paul movement. What I find interesting, a couple things here. First of all, of course, they're playing the the woman card, and it's so funny hearing a liberal, which is Cenk here from the Young Turks, acting like us, right? I mean, welcome to our world, the Young Turks. This is what we fight against, right? If you listen to the Young Turks, he's never taken that position of how unfair the establishment is. He's been part of the establishment until it hits Bernie Sanders' world. Now he's talking about how, you're phrasing the questions and look how you're wording things and you're saying that it's the first female. I mean, in all fairness, they should flip it the other way around. No one has said how Bernie Sanders would have been the first Jewish president. I mean, no one ever talks about that. Why? Why not? Where's that at? Right. And in all fairness, I give credit, and I've said on this air that I have respected Bernie Sanders, just like I respect Ron Paul. I don't agree with Bernie Sanders' views, but I respect him as a candidate, unlike Hillary Clinton. And Bernie Sanders never played the Jewish card. So we have to all give him credit for that. But it's interesting to hear Cenk be on the defensive, act like the victim, because he is. He's a victim of the establishment, and they're getting a taste of the medicine we've dealt with these superdelegates and spinning things around. So welcome to our world.
Well, I'm glad that I'm not paying attention. You know, Keith, come up here. I want to ask you a question. All right. Keith's just lounging. All right. In your, you knew that today was Trump Day, so I'm just going, you're obviously paying attention to something. What are you getting out of this Sanders-Hillary thing? Is she going to get, Assange just released that WikiLeaks is going to release enough information to get her indicted.
Yep.
Do you think she'll get indicted?
0% chance.
Really?
Yeah. She has different friends than you and I have. If it was me, I'd be in jail and probably for life, multiple sentences. Even when I was in the military intelligence back in the reserves, it was amazing how much they emphasized the secrecy and special compartmental information. And if just one email went out, I'd be in a cage.
Yeah, but they, for her, it's okay because we're the decidifiers.
Right.
Alright, so 0%
chance. I'll bet Frank a dollar.
Well, actually, that was one of the other parts of, there was a second bet. It was, the first was about Trump making it to the nomination, and then if he took it, he would win decisively. Not just win, I said decisively. But we also talked about whether she would be indicted or not. And I did that whole story for a couple hours, thanks to Ernie, on the Benghazi story.
Which was an amazing presentation. He got a lot of goodies on it, and it just doesn't matter.
Well, thanks for that backhanded compliment. But the thing is, the more you understand the story, the more you understand what is out there and what is about to hit the anvil. The question is, this information will come out. The question is, will it come out before the race or, in traditional, typical fashion, after the election? Now the legal challenges are over. Now we can release the info.
Well, that's what the State Department said. They're not going to release all this crap until we just can't quite get it done until the end of November.
WikiLeaks will help us out.
Yeah, they want to be employed. I mean, this is fun for a lot of people because it's easy money.
For what?
Well, it's easy money. Pundits. I mean, that's what government jobs are. It's easy money. You just got to keep pushing things down the road, and before you know it, you get pensions
and
all that stuff.
House of Cards is not going to be out again until after.
Are you a political actor?
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence Thursday Trump Report with Dr. Frank Tamburi. But got a lot of stuff. Got the Orlando shootings and how that playing into national politics and who's whining about what and everything. The libertarians, we just sit back over here and we kind of Anybody know that that guy, his ex-wife said he was gay? Was it Muslims are killing gays and nobody cares, or somebody they'd be, you know, applauding him or what, you know, but he's gay, and then how did, oh, and his dad ran for president of Afghanistan and he's a CIA asset. And I'm like, damn, you can't make this crap up, man. Yeah. You didn't know that, Keith? No. Check this out. The guy that did the shooting, they're saying there was multiple shooters. That's starting to come out. There is not just one. This thing's totally breaking apart. Mm-hmm. But he goes in, gay club, comes to find out that he was gay or had gay tenor. His wife said he was gay, whatever. And not there's anything wrong with it. So he goes in there, does that. Well, his dad was one of the guys running for president of Afghanistan and is a CIA asset. I know. You can't make this stuff up. So I'm just going, wow. Well, there's phone calls that he was making that not recorded. You know, Frank's going to talk about that. But you know, there's some medical news you wanted to say first, too.
Two things. Just, you know, I get so many comments. People say, we love the politics, the economics, but there's always like a couple comments about medicine, especially from an integrative and or economic perspective of medicine, or just about crazy world of medicine. So the FDA approved a new weight loss device. Okay, this just takes the cake. It is, get this, a stomach pump called Aspire Assist to combat obesity. So what this is an actual ejection purging pump. So
I can eat whatever I want.
You can eat whatever you want.
They actually pump my stomach.
They surgically install a spigot.
No freaking stomach. Way.
It's right here. And then you just eat whatever you want. And then when you're done, you go into the bathroom and you just undo the tube. And the tube extends kind of like the Borg, goes into the toilet. And out comes your Happy Meal. It's all ready to go. You just close it back up.
And
FDA, our government just approved this. And here we go. Matter of fact, here, Ernie, here's a picture of it. There you go. Just as a picture. We can maybe put it online. I saw it.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
I don't mind advances in medicine, but I think this one, I don't really use that word offensive, but in a from a naturopathic perspective, that's pretty close. So that just takes the cake. This is the direction that we're going in. But at least our government approved that. Now, it won't approve many cancer drugs and many other, you know, we have to fast track those and get permission. But we can now legally purge ourselves. So we have a device to be bulimic. All right. Next medical news is the Fortune article. Huge, huge news in the world of Theranos. And I wouldn't normally bring this up, but we have mentioned Theranos a number of times on the air. For those of you that don't know, it's a company that began a handful of years. Well, it's been about 10 years, but they came out of the closet a few years ago to be a lab that works in the closet of Walgreens here in Arizona and some in California. We were sort of the beta testing. This was a lab that had this new technology by a woman named Elizabeth Holmes, and they considered her on Fortune magazine. They put her on the front cover as the most influential and richest woman under the age of 30, and she was worth, I don't know, it was like $4 billion, and at least on paper. And so Fortune did a whole story. They called her the next Steve Jobs, because what she did was she micronized and modernized laboratories. So instead of having to get your blood pulled at a standard lab facility like Sonora Quest, and you stand in line for an hour or so with a bunch of sick people and then pay a whole bunch of, you know, $80 for a test, now you could walk into a Walgreens, get your finger pricked, just one little tiny little, you know, needle prick on your finger, that one drop of blood could run a whole line of labs rather than having a whole vial of blood pulled. You're in and out in 5 minutes, and then you can get some some milk on the way out at Walgreens. So this, and the test, instead of $80, let's say, for a test, that same test would be $6.32 or something. So this was a definite threat to the establishment of labs. The problem is that they did not want to declare how they were doing their technology, but if they didn't declare or show and open the doors to outside third party regulators and physicians to see how they're actually coming up with this technology, then they were under attack, because if I run a lab at Theranos, will it be the same value at a standard lab? The patients love it, so they kind of turn the other way with this. I understand. But from a doctor's perspective, it was an issue. Anyway, they've been under attack immensely, even though they have Henry Kissinger, Mr. Petrodollar himself, on the board of directors for Theranos.
Now, well, what the hell good is he then?
Yeah, exactly. This has been going on for the past year. As a doctor in Arizona, it's very confusing. We don't know how to advise our patients. You know, the patients love it, and then we go, you know, turn on the news,
and boom, and
they're under attack more and more. Well, anyway, Forbes, the magazine that declared her the next Steve Jobs just like, I think it was 6 months ago, they declared her bankrupt as of last week. They declared this astounding news article on Forbes.com saying that essentially, that Theranos is washed up, and their company that they valued it like 500 something million or billion, whatever it was, is now worth zero. This is Forbes magazine. And what happened, what instigated this, was that Walgreens, just a few days ago, right before this announcement from Forbes, Walgreens canceled and severed the entire contract with Theranos. So they just booted Theranos from all of the pharmacies here. So therefore, that was their leg up, their gateway to entry, a huge credibility problem. And so they are in massive, massive crisis control. And last night, when I was doing some prep work for the Trump Report, it came over the wire that now Theranos, Elizabeth Holmes herself, is going to give a, you know, the keynote response to some medical conference August 1st. So she's doing something she never has done. She's been in the closet, sort of very, very quiet, and refuses to speak on behalf of her company. Now that she's declared to be bankrupt, now she's going to come out, and they're going to have a whole panel of doctors that were handpicked by the establishment, and they're going to grill her publicly and have every question answered. And she said, you know, she has to answer every question. So this is going to be a heck of a news conference in the world of medicine. Medical liberty.
When are they doing this?
August 1st. So we are all going to be standing by watching this one. So that's Theranos news.
Well, you know, I tell you, the big problem is all this FDA approval thing, and it's not really a free market option solution today. They're using the government again, mm-hmm. you know, to determine what is and isn't. And I'm going, I don't really need them to do it. I mean, you know, I'd rather something else other than the FDA says. Don't mean squat to me, you know. So we'll see what happens. But I do like the concept. And that was the one thing that it struck with me was that they're going this way anyway with, and there's an X Prize for medical tricorders. And it go because they knew the weight of analysis and diagnosis and all kinds of stuff. And certainly you're in a whole different environment to be able to track your health and so on in space. We're going to Mars and crap. They want to have a lightweight tricorder fast. We get a couple of drops of blood, tells us everything, and kind of will 3D print a new heart for you, you know, on your way to Mars. So I'm just, you know, this is what's coming, whether she's the one doing it or not. I'm wondering if this effort is, one, she wasn't forthright in what she was actually doing, but it doesn't really matter. It almost seems like they're going to use this, whether it was valid or not, as an excuse not to have these kinds of innovations or slow it down. And I'm just, it's going to happen anyway. And I'm just like, you know, what happens when you get in space? Oh, I'll give you a perfect example. The space station, to keep down all the microbes and everything and them be healthy and everything, and use colloidal silver. And they go, well, that's not approved. And they go, yeah, but we found that the space station's out of jurisdiction. Seriously.
They said that.
Yeah.
It's not out of jurisdiction of the FDA.
They're going, no, it's the only thing that works. You know, up there, they go, oh, I'm sorry, but it doesn't matter. We don't care because we're out in space.
You know, our grandparents, when they used to deliver milk to the front door, they would put a silver coin, when they're made of silver, in the milk to keep down bacteria so that it would last until you got home, because before refrigeration.
Mm-hmm.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors
years of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the years has already happened.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime. 641-552-5046. That's 641-552-5046.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm.
And we're back. I'm on the line with Michael Kilsky, the state chair of the Libertarian Party and an attorney. And there's a lawsuit going on right now that is allow libertarians to be on the ballot by qualifying as write-ins for the primary and be printed on the general election ballot, which has been a method that we've done before. So my question is that if he's doing an argument in early August, will we have already had to have filed? When's our deadline for filing as write-ins to be on the ballot? So. Okay, by July 21st, we got to file that. So we need to be doing this now, even before they render a decision. Okay, all right.
He's speaking to the Michael right now.
Okay, well, we need to talk about this. I got to get back to the show, but we need to talk about this more. All right, I'll talk to you later, man. Thanks, Michael. All right, bye. There is a method that libertarians have gotten on the ballot. If you get it as many write in signatures as you needed petitions, you qualify, you're on the general election ballot, and you do it as a write-in for the primary. The thing is that the judge isn't going to render a decision until early August, and the deadline is July 21st. So we got to, you know, like get a bunch of candidates to file and get it done and ready, and that. And I know that, you know, they, them, those are not going to like that, so we need to start getting this stuff done now. So I'm like, all right, well, I thought we'd get a decision before, you know, it's freaking politics. I hate this crap. So anyway, we'll play. They have been, you know, the guys running all that. They're really pushing for me to do county recorder.
Right.
And because Helen Purcell, the county recorder here, took such a hit in this election cycle for the presidential preference, you know, show trial thing, you know, straw poll crap, a taxpayer-funded beauty contest. And people were pissed. This, and they see an opportunity for, of course, the Democrats take advantage of that, and with a libertarian, it makes it easier. So anyway, that's what's going on here in Arizona, and I'm just like, God, I'd rather spend my time and effort towards a cultural thing. But
this is how it works. So I don't want to get too much into it now. I want to get into the Orlando shooting, and we'll talk about that, and then go into the archive a little bit with an extremely dramatic and poignant clip that for any of you that doubt the fact that people over the Middle East have a problem with us, not because of Michael Jackson or our music, or that we believe many people here believe in Jesus, or that we don't like gay people, or all the reasons they've said, we have definitive proof that the reason they have problems with us is because we are over there in their neighborhood and their backyard messing things up. But before we get to that, as we're talking about local politics, many of you know I am... we will find out once this challenge, running for Senate, U.S. Senate seat here in Arizona for the Libertarian ticket.
I'm
running as the anti-establishment candidate. And we were waiting. They had all the candidates had until 5 o'clock yesterday to challenge me. We had a bet amongst many of us in our campaign that they would challenge or not challenge.
Yeah.
And we assume, because you have to keep in mind, the Republicans have spent so much time and effort to basically bend and corrupt the integrity and the law, in my opinion, by changing the way third parties can get on the ballot. Okay, the whole problem that we've had already. They spent so much effort to change the law here, railroaded this thing over the Democrats, over the Libertarians, over the voice of the independents and the people to suit themselves. So if you spend that much effort and political clout in order to do so, then when some little low-hanging fruit, little tiddly-widdly Libertarian candidate decides to run, you know, oh, the big powerful man has to sit there and challenge everything. So we got served the other day and
Wait, how many signatures did you need?
You needed, it was 3,200.
And you turned
something.
In what?
Like 4,500.
Okay.
Something like that.
Last night, I was in Tucson having dinner with my sons down there doing an assignment. I went down there to hang and take some newspapers and stuff down there. And I met with John Brakey. John Brakey's a big election fraud guy that's been doing this for a decade. Mm-hmm. And he first came, you know, as I listened to my shows and he's like, oh, and the injustice and the Democrat. A big Bernie Sanders guy. Well, he said there was a race there for county supervisor that the Democrat needed 140-something signatures and his friend that was an independent needed 800-900. And I go, yeah. And for Libertarian, it's even more because it adds how many independents and Libertarians.
Right, right.
And so I'm going, they really, this is, you know, damn. And he's going, I couldn't freaking believe it. I'm going, welcome to our world, man.
And the kicker is, keep in mind, the Libertarian Party is a closed primary. So that means, think about this, you have to be a registered Libertarian to vote or to sign a petition for a Libertarian. Okay, and if you're going to vote in the primary, you have to be a Libertarian. But so it used to be you had to, you know, all you need is a certain percentage of the Libertarians in the state, since after all, only Libertarians can vote for you. But the Republicans railroaded this thing through last year because they know, the establishment knows how weak and little that they are.
Well, they tried it 2 years before and they pulled it back because the referendum put it on the ballot.
So they change it and now force the independents to be part of that percentage. So that means huge, because most people in the state of Arizona are independent. They don't want the Democrat Party. They don't want the Republican Party. They're independent, but they cannot vote in the Libertarian Party, but still they forced us to have to get the same percentage of independents, which is a complete waste of time. This is
which
how politics works.
More signature requirements in some jurisdictions than there are Libertarians.
Exactly. It's more than there are. And then they challenge us, which means now we have to fight back. And of course, it just costs money to do so. This is, you know, the bottom line is this was happening with Sarvi at my house the other day. And, you know, she's very naive with a lot of this. And I kind of like to keep her that way, if you know what I mean. And she's hearing this conversation and she says, Is this really how politics works? Is this normal? Is this what happens to Libertarians? And, you know, God bless her, but I just wanted to bang my head. I mean, this is how most, not with her, but the fact that this is how most Americans believe. They have told people like you, Keith, and many of us listening in this audience, many of your relatives, when you try to explain this to them, and you say, this is how corrupt it is, what have you been told by your family and friends? They say that you're paranoid. They tell you that if this is really how it works, Frank, then we would all know about this. The media would expose. If it's this corrupt, we would all know about it. So you must be mistaken. No. This is what Dr. Ron Paul helped explain last time. Ralph Nader should have gone to jail. He should have allowed himself to be arrested when they tried to bar him from that debate. And now Bernie Sanders has exposed it. And you saw from that clip earlier today. And then Donald Trump has exposed completely how the system works. And we're going to expose it here. Matter of fact, Ernie, we're getting an embedded documentary group to actually film everything that's happening in this process. So that way, regardless, as you say, a win comes in many forms.
In many forms.
Absolutely.
In many forms.
Either way, people are going to know how this works.
We're going to run up against the end of the show, but we'll bring it into the break. There's some clips that we want to do and everything, but we got to talk about the Orlando thing and how it's being perceived and used and, you know, blah, blah, blah by, you know, left and right or R&D. I don't even know who the hell left, right, who cares. But the, you know, go ahead and how they portray it.
Right. So basically, we have spoken on the show about and again, when the music kicks in, we're going to go into the archive. I have an extremely powerful clip I promised earlier. So we spoke on this show. Matter of fact, one time when Ernie was out of town and Tarzan Keith and Razzie, we were here, and we explained the whole story of the petrodollar, why we're over in the Middle East, and ultimately the involvement with all of our military bases. On other shows, we've discussed how America and libertarians are not, and for any John McCain establishment people listening, we are not isolationists, as you guys want to keep spinning it. It's called non-interventionist. Okay, there's a difference, and if you have a problem with that, look it up in a dictionary or give us a call. We'll let you know the difference, because you keep getting confused on this, it seems. Non-interventionist is a country, like every country in the world except for America and North Korea, that basically wants to be left alone. They want to have neighbors. They want to have trade. They want people to come in and out. They want their cultures to mix. They just don't want their troops in other people's neighborhoods messing things up. And they don't want troops in theirs. It's very simple. You be a good neighbor. Golden rule. Treat your neighbors the way that you want to be treated. That is a non-interventionist. Every country. France, Australia, Sweden. You just pick one. That's what we want. Okay?
There's only 10 countries that aren't at war.
An isolationist nation is North Korea. They have walls around them, and they keep people out. And then you have America, which is an empire with troops around the world in everyone's business. That is what we're trying to change. And because of that, we have proof that that is why we are bombed and attacked, is because we're over there.
And we'll finish this. Tape is the proof.
Yeah, we have proof coming after
here
this.
Here we go. Thanks for listening. Trump Report. Okay.
Okay, let's So going into this, without going rehashing the history part, but I think it's important to show this pattern. On this show, we have discussed how the, Al-Qaeda have admitted everything from the Fort Hood shooting and the, what was the name of the battleship back in the 90s that was bombed?
Cole?
Yeah, USS Cole.
USS Cole. I mean, every time these attacks occur, how many times does the media explain to you what the reasoning given by the so-called terrorists is? I mean, you never really hear what they say. All you hear is that they're a bunch of deranged, crazy people. But if you actually listen to them, they say it's because we have our troops over there taking their oil and taking their resources. Okay. Now, whether you believe them or not, that's maybe another story. But that is what they say. Consistently. Then we were bombed on 9/11. After we were bombed on 9/11, the media, everyone spun it that, they just hate America. I guess they didn't like the outline of the Twin Towers.
They hate us because we're free. must not hate us. We must be on speaking terms now.
We're not that free anymore. They must like us a lot more now, don't they? They must love
we're
us.
On speaking terms. We've lost we don't our have any freedom anymore.
They must, we're a lot like them now. So after the bombing, the media tried to spin it that they just hate us. Why do they hate us? Well, I have an answer. Why don't we listen to see why they did it? Osama bin Laden gave a video. It was a 30-minute response, very, very measured, very well spoken. Of course, he spoke in Arabic, although he speaks perfect English, and we played it on the air. So those of you, if you're interested, just listen to what Osama bin Laden told the nation, the world, about why. And the specific reason that he said was because your troops are over here. He didn't say anything about that you guys, believe in Jesus and we don't care for Jesus and we don't like this. We don't like Michael Jackson's music. That's not what he said. He says, because you're over here. Now, some of you might say, well, maybe that was propaganda, right? You shouldn't be listening to that, Dr. Tambori. You're an un-American. Well, you know what? Then they had the CIA released the 9/11 Commission report. The 9/11 report, which, by the way, is technically public domain, even though they detracted and retracted a whole bunch of lines in there.
Redacted.
Thank you. My mistake. Redacted.
Same thing.
I don't use that word much because I don't do that. I don't like government and people. So they redacted all sorts of lines. But what they left in there, and Dr. Paul mentioned this during his debate when he ran for president, was that they attacked us because we're over there. It's in the 9/11 report that was issued, paid for by your tax dollars, and it was announced through our government, through Congress. That is the official, let me say it one more time, that is the official reason that our government has concluded why we were bombed, okay? That is the reason. Now, it doesn't matter what Fox News and CNN, everyone wants to tell you why. That is the reason why. And if you don't believe it, listen to the so-called terrorists. Then Al-Qaeda, because we've been there for so long, Al-Qaeda now, they've lost control of their own movement. That's turned into ISIS. Matter of fact, Osama bin Laden's kids began warning, saying, hey, you know, as much as bad as you think my father in Al-Qaeda is, these new kids, the kids that have been brought up in this. Remember, we've been there 15 years since 16 years, 9/11, right? There is a whole generation of children that were 3-4 years old at 9/11. They are now 20. They were brought up with bombs. They've been brought up with their friends getting shot and people around them dying. They've been brought up walking to so-called school with Hummers with American flags going, going up and down their streets. Okay, they've been brought up seeing aircraft carriers in their harbors. Okay, this is what they're used to. So now they've created a more radical version, which is ISIS. So
sounds like a plan.
So they have put out videos, and of course, many of their videos, unfortunately, the barbaric animals that they are, they turn around and they, of course, will decapitate or kill someone, obviously for attention, but. If you watch the videos, which are tough to do, I admit, but I think it's my duty and all of our duties to listen to what the enemy is saying. You don't have to believe it. I understand the media says it's un-American if you listen to them because that's propaganda. You should put your hands over your ears and your eyes and your mouth and just tune into Fox News and CNN. Let them tell you what's going on. So listen to the ISIS videos. We played some on this air. I'm sure the NSA, we got their attention doing so. We played some of their videos. We, of course, didn't play the end. But these sick videos are preceded by 10 minutes of them explaining why they're about to do what they're doing, which is we're over there. They keep saying this, okay? And they're trying to get our attention with these very, just sick overtures for attention, but that seems to be the only way to get the attention because we keep barring it. Of course, because they do these executions, we are being told, and I understand also, that if we promote these and we tell people to watch, they'll do more of it. So I understand that argument. I respect that greatly. However, we are, in a way, insulating ourselves to our own narrative, our own fishbowl. So some of you may still be in denial, especially now we have the shooting in Orlando. Okay, there's other shootings. I can't only have so much time because I have to teach my class today, which, by the way, I'm meeting the head of the VA hospital, having a little quick meeting with him at our medical school. So he's coming to meet myself and the president of the medical college. That's kind of another aside. But anyway, so we had the Orlando shooting this week. For those of you listening on the archive, I'm sure you all remember that very unfortunate event. And as usual, we cannot agree on anything about a news item. So the shooting occurs. The liberals now spin it that this is an attack on homosexuality. It's an attack on diversity. It's an attack on transgenders. It's an attack by politicians who tweet and people on the right and a certain person who might be running for president. And it's an attack because we discriminate with, who can be in a bathroom and that we haven't learned anything from Stonewall. And gosh knows, there's still a lot we have to do as a nation. I certainly believe that for equality. So we can spell equality with a big E, not a small E. But nevertheless, they're spinning it that they're victims of discrimination. Then you turn on Fox, and Fox, it's a whole different news item. Fox now, it's radical Islam, and they hate us because we're free, because we're Christians, and of course they kill Christians, and yeah, they certainly target them.
There are some Christian gays in there somewhere.
Yeah, maybe it was Christian gays. So this is what they attack. They attack, they're saying that they attacked us because of our freedoms and our religion, and therefore the president must call out this as radical Islam. Say those words, President Obama.
Why is that such a big thing?
Well, I believe it is because I think at its core, we're still reliving the Crusades in some ways. I mean, it's still at this religious war component. I don't believe that people who say this overtly believe it. I don't think it's on their intention. I think it's maybe just a subconscious bent. That's the kind of the way I see it. But the point is, no one has heard from the terrorist himself, the so-called terrorist here, about why he did what he did. I mean, he's a terrorist. He came to this country, a homegrown terrorist. Well, yes, he did, supposedly. Now, during the shooting, if those remember, it didn't happen in 5 minutes. The shooting occurred, and then he took hostages because many of the people ran into the bathroom, into the stalls. And while he was in there, he herded people in the stalls. He began shooting shooting them, and the stories of those survivors are just harrowing, and just put chills down your spine or catch in your voice when you hear them. And I have one to play for you in a moment. We're going to play it maybe long form on the archive on the website. But there were some survivors.
About 12 minutes.
They were in the survivor. There were survivors. And they stated that when he was in that room waiting, I guess the police were outside, you know, lower your weapon and all this, he now had a platform. He got the world's attention. He took a cell phone and he called a television station. I guess the local station. I was ABC or I forget which affiliate it was. And so the patients discussed how he spoke on the news. He spoke to somebody and explained why he was doing this. Of course, I tried to find the video. I'm thinking, okay, well, if he called somewhere, maybe, I mean, he called 911. Then he also called a television station. I believe he called both. But when he called, I'm thinking, well, there's got to be a tape out there. Well,
hell no.
Can't find the tape, right? Can't find the tape. So I wanted to know, what did he say, right? This person, this terrorist, is here in this country. He's doing this act. He planned this out. He's giving his life up, okay, for a cause, whether we agree with it or not. Let's hear why. But nope, can't hear it. Didn't happen. Can't find it anywhere. So in my search, I wound up finding I watched it live, strangely enough, on a news channel. And I forget which cable station. It was not CNN. It was, I forget which station it was. But they were playing live it was WSBTV down in Florida. They were broadcasting a live event, which was patients that were able to speak and just tell their story. They all came out and they sat in a circle in hospital beds, but they put the circle and each had some people around them and counselors, and it was a very solemn event. But they passed the microphone from person to person, and they each had time to share, to say whatever that was on their mind, to tell their story, to share their grief, and they played this live. Part of me, I thought it was exploitative. I didn't like the fact that they were, you know, saying, now here's from patient Smith, and you hear the story, and then when they get to the shootings, then they cut to commercial. Now after the break, we'll continue with patient Smith's story. I think that was exploitative. I had a problem with that. But nevertheless, they got to this one patient. Her name's Patient Carter. And she's an African-American young lady. She's 20 years old. She's from my neck of the woods, Philadelphia. Should we play the whole thing? You want to play the whole clip or just the pointed area? Let me play the pointed area just, and then we can put the whole thing online. Because it'll make more sense this way. She goes on for like 10, 15 minutes. She starts off with a poem. She's a poet, a beautiful poem, I have to say, about being the survivor's guilt and what she saw. So it's good to hear that. But then she goes on to the whole story. How did she show up at Pulse? Her and her two girlfriends. They showed up. Remember, they're women, and this is a gay club. So how did she show up there? I'll explain in a moment how she got there. But the key part is when the shootings began. And then she was in that room when he made the phone call. And I want you to hear from her words. And this is a 20-year-old young lady. She's not a, you know, Fox reporter. She's not CNN. She's just someone.
She's not one of their actors.
Yeah, exactly. Could be one of their actors. Could be an actor. But she flew down her first time as a young adult with her two girlfriends after graduation, and they went to Orlando with their family to have their first vacation. I don't know for a fact, but I get the impression they don't have a lot of means. So this was a very special event for the first time to come down to Orlando. And this was, you know, the young girls to finally have a time of their lives. And she spends time discussing how they had to, you know, they were dropped off in front of the nightclub. Then they had to go to a 7-Eleven to get changed into their club gear. They went into the club and the person had, you know, they had to show their ID, and they were laughing about how they had to show their ID for the first time to get in. The woman who was carding them, she wore very fancy shoes, and she commented how much she loved her cute shoes. Of course, that woman did not survive.
Did she take her shoes?
No.
Okay.
So
as bad.
Yeah, that was. I don't care for that. But so she's telling this story about how she's having the time of her life. One of her friends went to the bathroom. She never saw her again. And then how she had the most wonderful time, innocent time of her life, to what transpired with the shooting. And then she was heard. Everyone was rushing and stampeding. And she got sort of pushed into the bathroom under the stall. Then her story goes from here. But the most important point is what this phone call was. So let me plug
this in. Yeah, see, go ahead and plug it in. Yeah. See, my thing is that every time you have these, it's always the stories of the little children and their parents, and you see pictures. They're the same families that were doing it in the last shooting, or there's some other, just like a traveling road show or something. And I haven't yet seen, I haven't looked really hard, but has there been even any photographs of the people in there from their cell phone of what happened, video of blood and kind of, you know, I mean, where's the evidence? I mean, I haven't seen any. It's everybody talking about it. You know, I want to see the evidence. And I'm sure this is dramatic, and they have it. It hasn't been 3 weeks yet. You know, I'm always about the 3 weeks thing. All the other stuff, just it's a narrative of what they want us to know. But
And one other thing, although when we play what I'm going to have Ernie do is play the long form after I leave. I have to go to class, which is why I can't sit for the whole thing. I just want to play this and we'll comment afterwards. But what she says in the long version is that when he was on the phone to people, he was also speaking in Arabic and then made some comments about his other people and that he had snipers on the roof. So when the police came in and they barged through and blew through the wall and they were saying, is there anybody else here? Is anybody else here? After they shot this first terrorist, she said, I mean, they were all screaming, look out, watch out. They were afraid to even leave because the police were saying, now go run out of here. They were afraid to leave because they believed, from what they heard the terrorists say, third parties, that there were other people on the roof. So she was convinced that there were other people involved. And that's interesting that you said that earlier, that, you know, there might be more people. Now, I don't know for a fact. This is just her view. Granted, she was under quite a bit of duress.
Well, anybody that said that, they cut them off. This story is being managed. I mean, I don't want to make light of it, but I'm just like, I see, which time have they done this in the past that it's been manipulated every time? All you have to do is wait.
Well, let's just hear from Patient Carter.
What we'll do is we'll take the whole video and we'll put it up in the third hour archive so they can just watch
the whole
thing.
We'll play this. We can comment. But let's just see if the establishment is going to denounce this poor young lady.
All right. There we go. Push the button.
It's still not real to me. I'm just like, why are they doing all of this? And I was even Snapchatting in the bathroom stall. Once we got in there, we ran into the bathroom. Me, Tara, and Nakira were like actually the last ones to actually get into the bathroom stall, the handicapped one, the biggest one. And the guy who, it was an African-American male who ended up closing and locking the door, who I believe got shot from doing that in the process. And the gunman entered the bathroom and was shooting his machine gun. So we're all like scrambling around in the bathroom, screaming at the top of our lungs when he was in there for the first time. And then, you know, people are getting hit by bullets, like blood is everywhere. And then there was the moment where he stopped shooting in the bathroom. And that's when everyone looked around. And that's when I first realized that my leg was shot. There were several other people shot and bleeding in the bathroom. That's when Akira, who didn't make it, realized she was shot in her arm. And I'm not sure if that was when Tiara also got shot in her side, but we were all pretty bad. And at that point, we knew that this wasn't a game. This was very real. And this is something that was really happening to us right now. And it was shock. We just went from having the time of our lives to the worst night of our lives, all within a matter of minutes. So the gunman had stopped shooting for a while. I don't know where he went. But I was lying in the bathroom floor. I was right underneath the stall wall, so the stall wall was like right above my face because I was trying to get most of my body into the second stall because there was like a lot of people and my leg was injured at the time. Like I got shot in my leg and it was actually pinned under the person who was laying right next to me. So it was very painful and we laid there for hours and hours hoping that someone came and got us and hoping that the police would come through at that point in time and just like save us all. But throughout that period of hours, the gunman was in there with us and he actually made a call to 911 from in there. Everybody could hear who was in the bathroom, who survived, could hear him talking to 911 saying that the reason why he's doing this is because he wants America to stop bombing his country. And from that conversation, from 911, he pledges allegiance to ISIS. And he started speaking, and I believe after he got off the phone with 911, he started speaking in Arabic. And now that I know to be Arabic, at first I didn't know like what the language was. And after that, he even spoke to us directly in the bathroom. He said, "Are there any black people in here?" I was too afraid to answer, but there was an African-American male in the stall where most of my body was, majority of my body was, had answered. And he said, "Yes, there are about 6 or 7 of us." And the gunman responded back to him saying that, "You know, I don't have a problem with black people. This is about my country. You guys suffered enough." And he made a statement saying that it wasn't about black people. This isn't the reason why he was doing this. But through the conversation with 911, he said that the reason why he was doing this is because he wanted America to stop bombing his country. So the motive is very clear to us who are laying in our own blood and other people's blood, who were injured, who were shot, that we knew what his motive was. And he wasn't going to stop killing people until he was killed, until he felt like his message got out there. And he made several other comments.
So, I don't see how much more specific you can be. And here's someone who does not, I don't believe, has a political agenda here. She says it twice and even reiterates, you know, that it was very clear to her and everyone in that room why he was doing what he was doing.
But is this commentary, this narrative, making it out anywhere?
Not that I'm seeing. As I said before, it's unreal. Unreal. I mean, this should be the story. You turn on MSNBC, it shows how hateful Republicans are, and we hate, you know, the GLBT community, and it's intolerance, and the answer is to take away more guns, right? So instead of addressing why people don't are coming here to kill us, is to not address why they're coming here, keep the troops over there, keep going into debt in order to continue these military bases with troops over there bombing their countries, and then when they come here to bomb us, we won't have any guns because now the government wants to take them away because they think that's how we answer this problem.
We had a Capitol lobbyist, John Bileko, I think, from Gun Owners of America on yesterday. And his whole thing was that they're aligning now with Pink Pistols, which is a gay community. We worked with them in the mid-90s. Safe. We were all over that. We knew the guy here. And they're like, we need more guns. You know, the gay community is like, arm up, man. You know, it's kind of, so I don't think this narrative is working the way that they hope or want. I'm just, when you get all these connections and who these guys are and link with, I'm willing to just wait a little bit before I, you know, take it to, there's always something, you know, there's always something. And I'm really disappointed that the media is trivializing it and politicizing this as much as they are.
It's disgusting to watch on both sides. And I mean, this is the story. It was riveting. It was absolutely, and there's more stories behind this. Now, the second part, just very, very quickly, this will be like 30 seconds or a minute, is in the very beginning, well, not the beginning, in this clip, they actually cut out her poem, which I need to find, hopefully, the full interview with the poem, which really was
worth
listening.
Well, send Donna the link so she can put
them
in the
archive. But after the poem is where she starts here. But I want to explain to you also, just a thought. I don't know this for sure. But they just announced today that they found evidence in his house that I think it was a letter or an email. I forget the details on this, but they found proof that he was working for ISIS and the reasons why, and he was pledging himself. So they found more evidence, no surprise, after they raided it. But question is, you know, did he really do this because he doesn't like gay people, right? They're making a big deal that he told his ex-wife that when he saw two men kissing, he found it disgusting and this sort of thing. Now, you know, I'm sure there's people out there that are in favor of gay marriage and equality.
I thought he had an ex-wife that said he was gay. The shooter was gay.
Yeah, well, some people thought that because he went to this club earlier on. So the question is, was he going because he was gay himself and maybe had some kind of identity problem, or was he going just to scope it? Now, the question might be, why did he pick that club, right? The liberals, of course, have to spin it that he's doing it because he doesn't like gay people, and that's why. Now, I'm not in his mind. I don't know exactly why, but listen to why three young ladies from Philadelphia on their time here, they just show up in Orlando. Why are three women going to a gay club? So let's listen to what Patient Carter has to say for just a minute and just think, could this be perhaps the reason why he chose this club?
How did me and my friends end up at Pulse nightclub? Well, we just got to Orlando, Florida from Philadelphia the night before. So we just got there. This is my first time ever being in Florida, the first time ever being in Orlando, first time ever being at Pulse nightclub. How did we even get there? Akira, who unfortunately is no longer here, Googled maps like popular clubs in Orlando, and Pulse was the first one to come up. I had like 5 stars, and we were so excited. We were extremely excited, and so her mom and her dad drove us there, and we actually reached Pulse nightclub outside of it around 11:50, but because we needed to go get change to get inside, we walked over to 7-Eleven together. So by the time we got to Pulse nightclub, it was probably a little after 12.
All right.
So, you know, for what it's worth, just consideration. I mean, if you're going to make a worldwide impression and you're trying to get the world's attention, you know, maybe if you're going to pick a club to shoot up, you know, you'd look on, unfortunately, you look on Yelp and say, oh, this is the number one club everyone goes to, 5 stars.
Now, was
star.
He
maybe
from Orlando? Was the guy from Orlando or somewhere else?
Do you know, Keith, where he's from?
Because, you know, it's Disney World, man. You know, it's Orlando. Because this is what I'm talking about. It's always going to be, you know, the Durka Durka Jihad Mushroom Cloud of St. Louis Arch, Golden Gate Bridge, Disney World. You know, and they got bad news. They had a 2-year-old scarfed up by an alligator. I can't even think of that.
That was a sin.
Sucks,
my God.
Man. But the there's so much more on this. I talked to Donna about it. I go, no, I don't really want to do specific shows. We've done shows on Sandy Hook. We've done shows on Columbine. We've done shows on As It Happens. But I just know that we're not going to be doing it until towards the end of July because we'll be gone for a few weeks. But I didn't want to do it before because it was before the 3 weeks was up. Because I know from past experience, all this kind of stuff plays out. And then it's on the conspiracy video, you know, lines of the different shows that will do the analysis and go down and actually look and see and evidence and, you know, freedom of information request of the report of whatever the hell and try and piece together what really happened and who these guys are. And a lot of that's still coming out. So I choose to wait until then. And I don't mean to make light of it. I'm just like, I can't muster up enough, you know, take this seriously because every time I've ever done in 25 plus years of activism, it never is what they say it is.
Mm-hmm.
Never. Never. Not one time. So it's going to be interesting if they, you know, do a little more background, even these people that are talking, because I've seen like Sandy Hook. These people, who the hell were they? You know what I mean? It's crazy stuff. So and who benefits from this? The war machine. They're trying to,
mm-hmm.
and I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, saying, look, the reason they're doing this, because we're over there. This is all the blowback stuff. This is what Ron Paul been saying.
Exactly.
All the books and so on that Giuliani should be reading. I mean, you know, this is, I understand. I'm not going to commit any of this to certain of facts of nothing, you know, for a while, because I just leave my mind open and I choose not to care for 3 weeks.
That's a good rule of thumb. That's a good rule of thumb.
Vince Aprinowitz. He was the Las Vegas Review Journal editor there and an author, a bunch of books. We had an article about how the news industry works in newspapers we had done before and so on. And he made it very clear he would do columns because he'd see the news feed that, you know, this is what you put on your front page.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he wouldn't write a column for 3 weeks. He would go and interview. That was his standard, 3 weeks. Because by then, you got the 24, the 72, the 48, the one-week news cycle, and it kind of, you know, pares down. And then, no matter what you find out after that, nobody cares, you know. They already got it in their mind. So he was the one that broke that all these shootings were by guys that were on Ritalin. He's going, you know, you look at these, the common thread of all of this, these guys are taking psychotropic drugs, and they're trying to, and it's when they get off of them, when you start taking off or you lower your dosage, you have to be on suicide watch for 3 days. You know, this is common. He's going, look, this is a pharmaceutical problem. These guys at Virginia Tech, Columbine, all these guys that are on these drugs. And he goes, this is what the real story is. And he goes, you have to wait and talk to people after. Because then they can actually talk. Before, they're threatened, they're intimidated, they're not getting in the news cycle, they're doing whatever other narrative that they want. And it's interesting that this local news station did a live, you know, thing, you know, so it couldn't be kind of, you know, cut or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get more and more of that, like when the We Are Change, Luke Rutkowski and Dixon from Press for Truth, I think is where he's at, and all these guys, Berwick and them, in Dresden, covering Bilderberg. If you're not there doing it, it's just spin. So it'll be time for us. Nobody will care, and it'll already be settled, and they'll have the nomination stuff done and all that kind of crap by the time I get to it. But when I do, we'll have some guys that really did some investigation, people that were there, mm-hmm. people that, you know, we'll do some, you know, who wants to talk about it, and I'll do a few days or a week or off and on, whatever, at the end of July. And then we'll get, then. So I would encourage you to kind of, you know, take it, yeah, they said why they did it, but you need, I mean, just keep your mind not too polluted until there's time for us to really put it together.
Well, I think some of it, too, is where's the outrage from the people, let alone the media, to say, release the tapes. You know, I want to hear what he said. Release the 911 tapes. What is there to hide from? This person attacked fellow Americans. Play the tape. Stop the secrecy. And then tell
us. Because they'll do it again and tell us again.
And then let a bunch of talking heads tell us between MSNBC and Fox version how it is again. I mean, I'm tired of this.
Keith, come up. I want to ask you a question before we stop.
Before Keith gets on there, I want to mention another point that I, when I mention, like, when I sometimes I'll say so-called terrorist and such, I want to be clear about the reason why. Because it's all relative to where you're at. If we had Chinese aircraft carriers out in San Francisco Bay, if you have Hummers driving up and down the street with Chinese, you know, militants, or if you have, you know, Russian soldiers or Iraqi soldiers walking up and down with bulletproof vests and, you know, AR-15s and catcalling our wives and our daughters walking down the street, if we saw them walking around with guns constantly, okay, since you're a child and your schools have been blown up and everyone knows two or three friends, your best friends who never made it to their 20th birthday, if you saw this enough times, exactly, at some point, if that happened in America, I don't know about some of you listening, but I think some of us might go to the store. We would get maybe a bottle of Everclear and get maybe a gas-soaked rag and maybe go to town, okay? That's what our founding fathers did. We did this over a tea tax, a little tax on tea. We wound up revolting. We put them on our currency, which is not worth anything. That is what we've done. So if we have done that, if I do that or you do that, with soldiers from other countries marching up and down our streets, the question is, am I a patriot or am I a terrorist? It's all in the beholder. So that is why I say that. Do I celebrate these people? In no way in hell. No way in hell. These guys, I mean, I'll use the word terrorist. That's technically, you'd say, domestic terrorist. But I just put in perspective that if it's true that they're doing this because we're over there, I don't know. I don't know what to call them. I guess they're a terrorist from our point of view. But if roles were reversed, I don't know. What would we call ourselves if we were trying to defend our nation from being attacked from somewhere else on our home soil? I don't know. Food for thought. Ask yourself. Or better yet, ask your representative who's trying to run for office in your state. See what they have to say.
Yeah, Keith, go ahead. Interesting. Oh, I forgot I was going to ask.
No, Frank, you summed it up well, and it echoes from Ron Paul when I first heard it back when he was running for prez for the first time that I heard him back in 07, 08, but I know he ran earlier, so.
Well, I'm glad that this narrative is starting to come in. Oh, yeah, I know what I was going to ask you. What do you think? Do you think that these reasons and these tapes and giving them a stage and it would promote more of this? Or do you think it should just that we should know or it not be sequestered from our awareness? I mean, what do you think on reading the treatise of the mass killer kind of guy?
Well, it's the whole internet thing. I mean, since the internet has come into play, I think the people have more information. Now, obviously, a lot of it is propaganda from the mainstream media news outlets. But for the most part, the internet with We Are Change and with some of the smaller bloggers and Julian Assange, we were able to make decisions. And
it's going to come out anyway. Might as well. What the hell?
Yeah, well, I mean, what do you mean by...
Well, the argument is that if we give them this kind of attention...
Oh,
They'll do it more. Or, you know, we don't say their name. Anybody that does this, you don't give out their name. You don't give them celebrity.
Thing, whole thing, you have a nudist running on a basketball court, you don't put cameras on him because you're going to probably have more nudists running on a court or streakers.
Yeah, this is kind of...
But no, this is
hell, I remember streakers all the time when I was in the 70s, 80s or whatever. Right. Now they get shot or something, you know?
Yeah, well, you get tackled and what have you. But no, I would have no problem releasing tapes. I want to know the information and who you know, the government keeping it in their crates. And no, it's out there.
Yeah, I'm, you know, if I had to pick it, I may not watch it, but I certainly think it should be available to watch. You know, that's just the bottom line. All right, the end of the Trump report. Thanks for coming in, guys. You know, you got some more goodie. Donald will have in the archive the full video and the poem and everything and all the interviews of the victims of Orlando in the hospital. Thanks for coming.